Well, thank you very much, everyone, and welcome. I'm Don Garden. I'm the president of the RHSE. Thank you all for coming for a very special evening. So to members of the Bate family, especially Janice, and to members of the Gibb family, especially Anne, to Professor Graham Davison, to Professor Marion Courtley, to members of the RHSE Council, past and present, and ladies and gentlemen, I do welcome you here. And I'd like to start by recognising the traditional owners of the land on which we meet, the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation, and I pay my respects to their elders past and present. This is a special event, one which is mixed with sadness and recognition, with commemoration and celebration. We're recognising, remembering four great historians who connected to the RHSV and who made a huge contribution over the many years to the RHSV, to history, to community history in Victoria and indeed across Australia in so many ways, in their teaching, their writing and their community service, including through the RHSV. Now this is a crowded program tonight and we don't want to rush, but we do have a lot to go through. And there are two main parts to the evening. Initially, we are going to be remembering our four great historians, and then later, well, and recognising, not only remembering, sorry to those who are still here with us, and then later for those who are here for the lecture as well, upstairs, Peter Grom will be speaking around about 6:10. But first of all, to remember two of our greats who passed away late last year, Weston Bate and Don Gibb. And we will be announcing how we propose to remember their work in the future from the RHSV. And then second, on behalf of the Federation of Australian Historical Societies, I'll be presenting fellowships to Graham Davison and Marion Courtley. Before we commence, however, I want to note also the passing a couple of weeks ago of another one of our RHSV people and perhaps historian, one of our great supporters certainly, John Lay, very well known to many of you as a renowned age journalist, especially for his column Lay at Large, which ran for many years in the Melbourne Age. John had a great interest in history. Many of his articles were focused upon history and heritage, and he often featured them in his column. He was also involved in the work of the RHSV. In 1998, he became one of the original judges of the Victorian Community History Awards, and he continued in that role until 2009. In 2000, the RHSV published Faces of Federation, a book written by him and based largely upon material in the RHSV collection, and he co-curated an accompanying exhibition with that particular book. So we recognise John as well. Before I hand over to Richard Broom to speak about Weston Bate, let me just quote one of Weston Bate's sons, Lyndon, who has sent his apology for tonight, and he wrote, "Weston would have loved to be there and be part of the RHSV for this occasion and the many more that will follow. How true for all of us, and I'm sure the same applies to Don Gibb. We will miss both of them very much." And I now want to pass over to Richard Broom to speak about Weston.
When I found out that Weston was very ill, it was shocking. It was also surprising because Weston was a man of enormous energy and vibrancy. And so that's, I think, the way we need to remember him. He was a dynamic man. He was a dynamic family man. He and Janice raised six wonderful children, which with two of my own, I find quite boggling. He was a sportsman, and at the age of 91, he won the C-grade championship at the Metropolitan Golf Club over sudden death holes, the 19th and 20th hole. So he was a man of great energy and stamina. He was a poet, a gardener. He engaged with many, many things. He was a wonderful teacher and academic over a long life. He was passionate about the built environment around him, heritage, and was a defender to the last, and in his last months was trying with a group of others to defend the Dendy Street beach against what he considered inappropriate development. He was also a great stalwart at the RHSV, and Lyndon's right, he would have loved to have been here. He was always in his element because he was on the council for many years, he was president for 14 years, and he was also involved in many other bodies. So Weston was someone who engaged with life. He could never hold back. He always jumped in and got involved in many, many things, and generally ended up rising to the top and leading something or other, be it the Foreshore Association or the RHSV. So the question is, how to honour such a man? And the RHSV and Janice and the family have had discussions over several months. And a few decisions arose out of this. The first decision was inspired by Weston's own teaching. He began teaching in 1949 when I was beginning to walk. And he taught at three schools and then at two universities. And again, was master, was professor, was head of department, was foundation professor at Deakin. He was also a great teacher in the many public lectures he gave. I actually experienced his lecturing firsthand. I sat as a young tutor for 3 years in the mid-1970s and heard him speak about Victorian history. He was very passionate about this. He felt that Victoria was an exceptional place, not like that tawdry New South Wales that I'd come from. He felt that the gold rushes had made a massive difference to this society. It had created a liberal democracy, and he used to talk so passionately about the diggers who introduced democracy and hold up an imaginary nugget to the students and talk about the democratic mineral. And so it was a wonderful initiation into teaching for me. And so it's with great pleasure that I announce that from this moment on, there will be a Weston Bate RHSV oration, which would be held each year at the AGM, the first being on the 15th of May this year. Why RHSV in the title? Because he would have wanted that. That's us. And it also differentiates it from another lecture in his honour up at Sovereign Hill. And the word oration, I think, captures the power and often the majesty of Weston's deliveries and lecturing. So the first this year will be given by Professor Stuart McIntyre on the 15th of May, and he's going to talk about heritage, and I think Weston would have loved to be in the front seat to hear what is being said. So we look forward to many, many years of Weston Bate RHSV orations. The second initiative came from Janice's own gesture. At the time of Weston's death, she asked that people who attended the memorial service give flowers, and not in lieu of flowers, give a donation to the RHSV. Those donations have now reached $4,000 and possibly climbing. I haven't been in the last couple of weeks. And the RHSV is inviting us all to give to this ongoing fund. There's an ad in History News that's just come out. And tonight, if you'd like to buy one of Weston's books called Here's to Grandpa, which was about the artistic life of Janice's grandfather, then you can buy it for $10. And if you'd like to add a donation to that, well, why not? So consider that. So what will be the purpose of this fund? Well, Janice said that Weston always said to her when he was heading off to some function to speak or when he was doing something that he wanted to make history live. And certainly he did that. If any of you have read any of his works, for instance, Brighton or Lucky City, those books are full of vibrant writing. They're exciting to read in parts. When he talks about Main Street or the Eureka Uprising, he lived those and he conveyed it to people. And his speaking was always passionate, very lively, often full of gesticulations. So he was an energising person. He energised the community history movement over many, many years through lots of visits. So we hope to make what we will call the Western Bake Making History Live Fund. And Janice has said it can be at the discretion of the council as to how it's used, but she would like it to attract younger people to the society in some way, perhaps to help the outreach of the RHSV, and certainly to energise what we do and to make history live. So thank you, Janice, and the family. We thank you deeply from the RHSV, and we hope that you are delighted with how we're going to remember Weston. So thank you.
Thank you very much, Richard, and I do want to thank Richard for an enormous amount of work he's put in over recent weeks in making these arrangements, and likewise to thank Carol Woods, who has put in a large amount of work as well, liaising with the Gibb family and working with them to develop a tribute to Don Gibb. And I'd like Carol to come forward to talk to us about Don Gibb and about that tribute. Thank you.
As a boarder at Geelong College during the 1950s, Don Gibb participated in various aspects of school life. He won academic prizes, excelled at rowing, and became sergeant major in the school cadets. His school military record, however, was eclipsed by his role as the exuberant major general in a school production of The Pirates of Penzance. He performed the patter song, "I am the very model of a modern major general," to great applause. This versatility and zest for life never left him. Don was born in 1937 to a medical family, but his enthusiasm was for history. He studied at Ormond College and Melbourne University, gaining a BA and BEd, and later returned to complete an MA thesis on Sandringham, supervised by the maestro of local history, Weston Bate. After initially teaching at Camberwell High, Don later taught at Monash Teachers College and eventually at Deakin University, where he was appointed an associate professor. He became president of the Victorian Historical Association, wrote book chapters, articles, and numerous book reviews, and served as review editor of the Journal of Australian Studies for an astonishing 20 years. At an Ormond College ball, Don met Anne Balderston from a well-known Canterbury family, and they married in 1961. The couple had three daughters, Susie, Sally, and Jane. They lived for many years in Borwin Road, Canterbury, and enjoyed summers at their Mount Martha Beach house. Don drew on his encyclopedic knowledge to help his daughters with their homework, causing Sally to later describe him as Google before Google was invented. Don's environmental credentials could be disconcerting in practice. When a daughter asked him to turn up the heating in winter, he simply advised, "Put on another jumper." While living in the middle-class suburb of Canterbury, Don became a foundation member of the Canterbury History Group and a key supporter for 30 years. His attachment to the suburb led to a meticulously researched study of the local shopping precinct, titled Visions of a Village. It's a jewel-like book, delightfully illustrated by Stuart Warmington. Don's involvement with community history flourished at the Royal Historical Society of Victoria, and the Society honoured him with a fellowship in 2005. He was a councillor from 1998 to 2008, and also served on and was honoured by the Council of the Federation of Australian Historical Societies. As convener of the Publications Committee for 11 years and a member for much longer, his collegiality, succession planning, and unstinting support for history projects were invaluable. Don's knowledge and understanding of RHSV history and culture were unparalleled, and his personal kindness at the RHSV and beyond was legendary. From 2006 to 2017, Don wrote the books received review pages in History News. These concise, insightful reviews were informed by deep knowledge of Victorian history. Often they were the only professional reviews received by self-published authors. Don was a judge of the Victorian Community History Awards from 2011 to 2016. A team player with balanced judgment, he wrote masterful citations. His egalitarian sympathy and scholarship gave him an affinity with a competition that favoured grassroots projects and raised the standard and profile of community history. Don provided major assistance to many community history projects. For example, he was an advisor for 5 years to Olwen Ford while she wrote her wonderful Harvester City, The Making of Multicultural Sunshine. After a long struggle with heart problems, Don passed away on 9th of November. The main strands of his life coalesced at his memorial service in Canterbury. His devotion to family, bonding with friends, identification with place, and vocation in history. The service was held in the heritage-listed Emulation Hall near the Mailing Road Shopping Centre. The former Masonic temple with ancient Egyptian motifs seems symbolic of Don's view that understanding of the local is a pathway to the universal. Mozart's opera, The Magic Flute, based on Masonic rituals and Egyptian mythology, portrays the protective power of music and a quest to reach the humane and enlightened community in the Temple of Wisdom. Don loved to sing. Song was his magic flute, and his great-heartedness and scholarship made him an ambassador to the RHSV and elsewhere from the Temple of Wisdom. The RHSV for the last 10 years has funded an annual prize at La Trobe University, which is awarded to the best student in the third year subject Australian History. The recipient receives $300 and 3 years free RHSV membership. This prize will be renamed the Don Gibb Royal Historical Society of Victoria Prize. This prize is appropriate as Don's career was in education and he himself tried to draw young people into the society. Thanks to the great generosity of Don Gibb's family, this prize will be established as a memorial in perpetuity. Thank you.
Thank you, Carol. I think it's appropriate that we should just have a few seconds of silence now to remember our two much treasured and departed great historians. Good, thank you. There's a slight change of pace and perhaps tone now as we move on to the next stage, which is the recognition of two people who are here with us tonight. The Federation of Australian Historical Societies is the umbrella body for the community history movement across Australia, representing about 1,000 societies and 100,000 members. And amongst the many things which we do is to offer fellowships and merit awards to people who are giving above average service to the community history movement. Our fellowships are designed for people who have given outstanding service in their professional life, in their writing, in their recording and promotion of Australian history, but who also, and this is most important, have a strong connection to community history in some form, which is how they connect to the Federation of Australian Historical Societies. Each year we call for nominations, and last year two nominations came forward for people from Victoria, both of which the Federation Council agreed to last October. The first of these is to Professor Emerita Graham Davison, AO, FASSA, FAHA. Graham is the Sir John Monash Distinguished Professor and one of Australia's at Monash University and one of Australia's most significant urban historians, based mainly at Monash, but he has also worked in many other universities around the world. He has published widely on urban history as well as social history, heritage and museums, and has served the community in many ways. His best known works relate primarily to the urban development of the state of Victoria, most notably his books which include The Rise and Fall of Marvellous Melbourne, City Dreamers, Melbourne on Foot, Walk Through Historic Melbourne and Heritage Handbook. He was an editor of the multi-volume bicentenary publication Australians, published in 1988, and also of the Oxford Companion of Australian History in 1998 and 2001. General books on aspects of Australian development include The Unforgiving Minute and Car Wars. In 2015, Professor Davison won the Judges Special Prize for the Victorian Community History Awards for his book Lost Relations, Fortunes of My Family in Australia's Golden Age. And the book did set a new standard for family history within Australia. He has served the historical profession at state and national levels and has contributed significantly to wider community history, heritage and museum organisations. He was the first historian member of the Victorian Historic Buildings Preservation Council from 1976 and the first non-legal chairperson of its successor, the Historic Buildings Council of Victoria. He served as president of the Australian Historical Association from 1987 to 88 and was a member of the National Archives of Australia Advisory Council from 2000 until 2005. He's also been an historical advisor to the Museum of Victoria and was a member of the National Trust Industrial History Subcommittee in the 1970s. Professor Davison speaks regularly to community history groups and genealogical societies and inspires their members. And he did speak to our Community History Award presentation last year, and that certainly inspired many of us. So Graham Davison amply fulfils the criteria for the award of a fellowship by the Federation of Australian Historical Societies. I congratulate him and invite him to come forward to get his certificate. Right. I don't know where the camera is. Here's the camera. You say a few words? Yes. And there's your citation too, by the way.
Oh, thank you very much. Well, I'll come around this way.
Well, thank you very much, Don, and thank you for coming along, everybody. This is a great surprise and a very gratifying gesture on the part of the Federation. It's a particular pleasure tonight to be associated in an event with my colleague and friend Marion Courtley, and on the occasion when we honour the memory of my friends Weston Bate and Don Gibb. It's an occasion, I think, when we have an opportunity, at least on my part, to acknowledge some of those who've helped and inspired me, particularly those who've come, broadly speaking, out of the community history movement. I'm grateful for my teachers at university. I doubt whether I would have become a historian, however, if I'd relied only upon them, because already when I arrived at university, I think I'd had influences that had drawn me towards the study of history out of my own background and community. Some of you will know, if you've read Lost Relations, that I pay tribute there to my grandfather, Vic Hewitt, printer, book collector. I can remember as a small boy going into his library and being shown one of his latest acquisitions, which was a map of the first Melbourne land sale. He was a member of the Bread and Cheese Club, of the Henry Lawson Society, had a very keen interest in stamp collecting and in first day covers, and in particular he followed all the great pioneer flights of people like Kingsford Smith and Bert Hinkler and so on. And I remember that among the first history books I read were the books that he gave me about the history of aviation in Australia. He also gave me books like Frank Clune's books on the Overland Telegraph and other books about the history of Australia. I think compared with the influence of my teachers at school, his influence was far, far greater. My mother too had an interest in history. I can still remember as a boy going to Sydney on a holiday. We stayed in a camping ground somewhere down near Carlton. And she made a point of taking me into the centre city and guiding me down Macquarie Street and around the rocks and showing me the places that she associated with the early years of Sydney. My father was not a reader. My recollections, I recall him only reading about three books. One was Alan Marshall's I Can Jump Puddles. They're a weird mob. He thought that was very the best book he'd ever read. And Doctor in the House, he read all the Doctor in the House books. So he was not a great reader or writer, but he was keenly interested in history, especially the history of the places that he knew and had grown up in. And I remember he was a tradesman, as we went around Essendon, he would point out places that he knew had historical association. I remember we'd go down into the valley of the Maribyrnong River, and there was a place that he called the River Caves, which was an area which had been carved out of the bank of the river where sly grog sellers used to sell grog to the pleasure boats that were going up the Maribyrnong River to the tea gardens. And he pointed out the old homesteads that were associated with early days of the colony. So from him, I got a very keen sense of the way in which history was registered in the landscape. Intriguingly, despite the fact that he was not... I think he was a bit puzzled about me becoming a professional historian. In fact, he was very anxious that it was going to actually... I think he was amazed when it turned out that it actually made a living out of it. But later in life, he joined the Essendon Historical Society and eventually became its president. My first venture in history then was a local study. I began and wrote an honours dissertation on Richmond, a rather fumbling attempt to try and tell about the class relations in Richmond. And it was one of my academic mentors, Alan Martin, who said, "You want to write a local history? Well, you've got to go and see Western Bate." So in 1962, I was directed down to Melbourne Grammar School, where he was then, of course, still a master, and he interviewed me in the master's common room and showed me his impressive card catalogue and a card system and so on. So that was the first meeting with Weston, and then I later, of course, had the good fortune to be his colleague when we both found ourselves at the University of Melbourne and began to teach first course in urban history. We went to Sydney, we walked the rocks again, and from Weston I gained some of that immense enthusiasm that Don and Richard have spoken about, and he was a very significant friend and colleague, and it was a wonderful thing when we later, it happened in the same year, we both jointly won the Ernest Scott Prize for History, in his case for his book on Ballarat and mine for a book on Melbourne. So, thank you, Weston, and thank you, Don Gibb, too. The last time I saw Don was just a few, not long before he died, at the Canterbury Historical Society dinner. We have a kind of a connection with the Gibb family because, of course, my wife grew up in Baldwin Road, Canterbury, just a few doors from where Don and Anne lived. So for all those reasons, perhaps accidental and more profound, I'm delighted to receive this award, and particularly in association with those friends and colleagues.
Yes, thank you very much, Graham, and congratulations once more. The second fellowship goes to Professor Emerita Marion Quartley. And Marion has made a major contribution to Australian historical research over the past three decades, and maybe a bit more when I come to think of it. Her reach has been local, state and national. She is engaged in depth in local historical research and analysis, and was influential in the success of the journal The Push from the Bush. She has also written extensively on Victorian and national women's and family history. She was a leading contributor to the Bicentenary History of Australia with its innovative slice approach, and with Alan Atkinson, co-edited and was a major author of the volume Australians 1838. She chaired the History and Heritage Committee of the Victorian Bicentenary, which produced Double Time, Women in Victoria 150 Years, to which she contributed a chapter. Most of all, Marion Quartley has been a seminal force in women's history throughout Australia, by her teaching and publications over her long career. In 1994, she was co-author with Pat Grimshaw, Marianne Lake and Anne McGrath of Creating a Nation, a feminist reading of Australian history, which was republished in 1996 and 2006. In her long career, she has investigated the Victorian-based Australian Natives Association and its role as a major player in the making of Australian Federation. She researched local and community history in Western Australia and Victoria. She headed a major ARC discovery grant project on the history of adoption in Australia that resulted in many publications, including The Market in Babies, co-authored with Shirley Swain and Denise Cuthbert. And she was a chief investigator with Judith Smart in an ARC linkage project that produced a significant book, Respectable Radicals, A History of the National Council of Women of Australia, 1896 to 1906, and a website entitled Stirrers with Style. And just leaving the citation for a moment, I remember also early on in her career there was a history of Lilydale, a connection with local history, and also with the RHSV, because she did for about a year, I think it was, edit history news for us, and we are very grateful for that. So in all these ways, Marion Portley very amply fulfils the criteria for the award of a fellowship of the Federation of Australian Historical Societies, and I invite her to come forward to receive her fellowship.
Thank you very much. I am sincerely humbled by this. It's a great surprise and a delight, and it's wonderful to see so many of my friends here. I know an awful lot of people here. I feel very connected. I was only going to say one thing, and I'll say that in a minute, but I'm inspired by Graham to actually say a little bit about my family and my history. It's something I'm working on now, and partly inspired by Graham. And thinking back and looking at notes I made earlier, I realised that my first sense of myself as a historical person, a person that had links to history, was when I visited a great aunt and was shown a tea set that they had there beautifully displayed in the, you know, cedar cabinet in the front room, which allegedly was given to my great-great-grandfather by Arthur Franklin, Governor of Tasmania. She also wrote out a little account of how this happened beautifully. She sent it to me in the mail, and it's on little pieces of paper and written in a 19th century sort of hand with dots and underlinings. And I wasn't sure I absolutely believed her, because I was already, the story told there had large elements of romance, and I could see it was as much Georgette Heyer as it was kind of. And later on, I discovered that really most of it was myth. I've just gone back to it, and I'm now trying to track down. It's just possible that he did give them the tea set. I mean, there are conjunctions that make it just possible. So I don't know whether we'll ever be able to find out, but my cousin and I are now trying to organise for it to go to the Launceston Museum and Art Gallery, because, you know, that's an appropriate spot. And if they want to say there's a myth about it, they're very welcome to do so. So it was that sense that, yes, my family had a relationship to the larger history, I think. That and the fact that I was already reading historical romance in large amounts. But the feet on the ground thing, I think, came from that sort of experience. And I'd also like to stress what you talked about, which was that my very first publication was A History of Lilydale. And that was fabulous. That was wonderful. I had two small children, and I was going mad, and Harry said, "You've got to get out of the house. They're advertising for a historian for Lilydale." And so I spent 6 months interviewing people around Lilydale, often with a baby under my arm, and collecting or persuading people to bring in records. And I think that got things going, actually, in Lilydale. And it was a great experience, because you could actually see where things grew. You had to work out where things were sited to make sense of what you were doing. And that was a wonderful experience for me too, because I then brought that to the reading that I did of older documents. And it was always one of the delights to be able to work out exactly where things happened that you were writing about. But what I really wanted to say was that this is not just for me, this award, because really, after I did Lilydale, I haven't published another thing on my own. Everything I've published has been joint. Starting with 1838 and then working through to the Creating a Nation and the adoption book, and lastly, of course, the thing that I've done with Judy, which is a history of Judy Smart, hi Judy, which is a history of the National Council of Women. And in all of those experiences, I've been supported, I've been guided, I've been challenged, I've been critiqued, I've had to think, because I was working with other people. So this venture that I'm now moving into is my first, which is to try and do this family history thing, is the first that I've done on my own for, 45 years or something? But I really want to say that I would love to accept this honour on behalf of all those other people that I've been working with, a few of whom are here today, and I think that